friends, and welcome to the Co-op Show. I'm one of your hosts, Britt.
And I'm Jason.
And today we're talking about our time adventuring together and accidentally killing each other in Baldur's Gate 3 Early Access. So this game is in Early Access. It went into Early Access on October 6th, 2020, and I believe it will be there for at least a year. So actual release date of the game to be determined. We did receive 2 review codes from Larian, so thank you to Larian. This is an adventure RPG strategy game. It is rated M for mature for all of the good stuff: blood, gore, nudity, sexual content, violence, and strong language. Developed and published by Larian Studios, currently available on Steam, Stadia, and GOG. It supports 4-player online co-op, and 2-player local split screen is supposedly coming sometime during Early Access. That is Larian's goal. And it is $59.99.
And well worth it, I would say. This is, being a Larian game, we have come to have some high expectations because they deliver some awesome games.
Deliver. When you say deliver, it kind of makes me want to order pizza.
Like delicious?
Delicious pizza delivery. Anywho, so Baldur's Gate 3 takes place 100 years after Baldur's Gate 2, and the plot overview is as follows. Abducted, infected, lost. You are turning into a monster, but as the corruption inside you grows, so does your power. That power may help you to survive, but there will be a price to pay, and more than any ability, though, the bonds of trust that you build with your party could be your greatest strength. Power friendship, friends. That's my anecdote. That's not a part of the description. Caught in a conflict between devils, deities, and sinister otherworldly forces, you will determine the fate of the Forgotten Realms together. So this this game is based on 5th edition D&D, Dungeons and Dragons. Now, you and I aren't very familiar with D&D.
No, I mean, I don't know that I've ever actually participated in a D&D game. I know that you've done a few, right?
Yeah, so every PAX convention, we have this small, like, little group of awesome people that we all get together. We have a D&D run. And so right. We've done maybe, like, 4 or 5 at this point. Yeah. And before that, I had played a little bit back in my Zaxxy.com days. So
going old school there.
Oh, yeah, real old school. So we want to bring this up because this preview is coming from 2 people who really aren't that familiar with D&D rules, like specifically 5th edition. Like, I couldn't even tell you what 5th edition means, but I know that means something to a lot of you out there. And on that note, we're not also very well-versed in Baldur's Gate lore. I've played Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 1 and 2 on the PlayStation, or was it the GameCube back in the day? But obviously, like, that's not the core PC. You're core right. PC games or whatnot. The other thing we want to briefly mention before we get into our preview coverage is our history with Larian Studios. You know, we have a pretty good repertoire. Is that what I want to say?
Rapport.
Rapport. What's repertoire? Is that a word I just
repertoire is like, that's like, I think of it as like a toolkit.
Oh. Well, I don't know. We have a really good toolkit with them.
Hopefully we do.
Maybe. No, but they've treated us very nicely throughout the years. And, you know, we always make it a point. Well, back when you used to be able to go to conventions to hang out and play games with Sven, he would always, Sven. I always butcher his name so bad.
Sven.
And founder of Larian Studios, and we always make it a point to catch up with the team there. So, you know, I would say we're on really good terms with them, but, you know, of course we're going to give our unbiased opinions because that's what we do here on the Co-op Show.
That is what we do.
Yes, if we're not talking about deep thoughts on Untitled Goose Game, we're talking about deep thoughts on Baldur's Gate 3.
Deep thoughts on whatever game. You got it. You get it here.
Yes. So we played about, I don't know, like grand total, maybe like 7 hours if you take away all the crashes and whatnot on Steam, and maybe 3 to 4 hours on Stadia.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And there were a lot of crashes that we had to sort of reload from, which I think it's an early access problem. I don't think it's going to carry over into the final game.
Yeah. So, okay, like now we have Baldur's Gate 3. We are huge fans of Larian Studios, if we haven't made that very clear. Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2 are some of our absolute favorite co-op experiences we've ever had together. And we've played, you know, lots of games. And they're definitely like, I would say Divinity Original Sin 2 is probably like my top favorite co-op game that you and I have ever played.
Same. Yep, that would be my number one if we did like a top 10 favorite we've ever played show.
So we know our Divinities.
Yes.
But Baldur's Gate 3, I mean, let's break this down. It feels similar, but it also feels very different.
All right. I'd say it feels more similar than different.
Okay.
when, you know, the visuals, sort of the narration, the dialogue, the way that you interact with the world and with other characters and with the inventory, as well as even just the fantasy realm that we're in with, you know, similar types of species and creatures such as elves,
ogres,
and ogres, bugbears, and trolls, and so on. These are sort of common species or creatures that you see in a fantasy setting. And granted, I know that D&D has, you know, that these are all common to D&D. You also see these crossover into other fantasy, you know, IPs. For instance, Divinity, which has many of these same types of things, as well as things like even like Lord of the Rings has these types of things. So from a setting, you know, it's got that fantasy setting. It's got the top-down view, you know, your similar sort of party and inventory management. I think for me where it differs is really just in the mechanics of how the combat and specifically like the checks work. It's it's D&D, so the game is rolling a die or dice. We're not sure if there ever becomes multiple dice yet, but it's rolling a die for you and it's showing you what that roll comes out as, and you know, you progress accordingly. You either pass the check or you don't. And to me, that's the main part where I feel like it's different. What about you? Like, I feel like I see a lot more similarities than differences.
Yeah. I feel like because you and I have played, I mean, I always mention this whenever someone asks, because I am always recommending people play Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2. And they ask, like, there is such a huge learning curve here. Like, how the hell do I play this? And I remember when you and I first started, it was a pretty nasty learning curve. But, you know, we started out slow and we eventually got it. And I think if it wasn't for how well-versed we are in Divinity, I think we'd be also struggling in Baldur's Gate, because it does kind of have that same mechanic to it. Mm-hmm. Just throwing that out there. But I remember the last preview event I ever went to pre-COVID was for Baldur's Gate 3. And I brought this up with some of the staff there. And I said, you know, it really does feel similar to Divinity Original Sin. And granted, it's like a new engine and it looks way prettier. And there are some key differences. Like when you have conversations with other characters, you're looking at them, you're looking at it eye to eye, like through, you know, like we're having a conversation right now.
Right.
It's not top down like it was in Divinity. And I would say like that's a pretty dramatic difference, because I think it really helps propel the story forward and grow that like the intimacy with all of the characters.
Feels a little more immersive when you can like be at the face level of whoever you're talking to. Is that?
Yeah, exactly.
It's also like more cutscenes.
More cutscenes, the facial animations are just like top notch. Like it's a beautiful game.
As a matter of fact, I don't think there were cutscenes in Divinity as I think about it. I mean, other
than
maybe.
There were like scripted occurrences, but it wasn't right.
Between like chapters there were, but in, you know, like there were few in Divinity.
Yeah, it wasn't like a cutscene that you'd think of in traditional sense.
Right.
So like that part of it sticks out to me as being very different. The fact that you have your camp and you know, again, this kind of goes back to just the rules of Dungeons and Dragons. Like you have to take a short rest from time to time. You go back to camp, and I feel like all of the like personal relationships progress at the camp. I think that's when you're going to have like the majority of those conversations where maybe you're going to bang someone and you can say all the right things at camp, or maybe you get so mad at someone, you kick him out. I read an early access review where someone set someone on fire. Oh. And they turned to cinder. And I don't know who it was.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe it was like Gale or something. I don't know. So like there are those differences. And then like you said, the combat I think for me is the biggest.
Yeah.
The biggest difference, because you have an action, a bonus action, and then you can move.
Right.
And whereas like in Divinity, you just had, you know, your action points that you could increase. However, yeah. You know, depending on how you built your character.
So I'm sure that someone's listening right now and they're like, all right, I haven't played Divinity, so it's hard for me to understand what Baldur's Gate is like, you know, when you're telling me what's different and what's similar. So how would we explain it to somebody who has not played Divinity? Can you think of a way to like...
Yeah, it's an isometric turn-based RPG based off of 5th edition D&D rules. You have party members, you have the enemies, and you all... I'm focusing on the combat right now because I feel like that's such a huge part of what this game is. Mm-hmm. But when you're outside of combat, you have these big maps. I mean, they're pretty huge, actually. In the time that you and I played on Steam for like 7 hours, we uncovered maybe a third of the map, I feel like.
And that map was only like of Act 1.
Yeah.
And there are how many acts?
I don't know if they've confirmed that. Maybe 3. But Lyrian has said that they expect the first act to be 20 hours. So that's pretty much on par with like where you and I were.
Yeah.
And then when you're outside of combat, you know, you're just exploring, you're finding treasure chests, you're finding random NPCs, you're finding side quests, maybe better gear, some lore stuff. So they really reward you in exploration. So what I really love about these games, and one of the big staples of it outside of combat, is just the player's choice. Like, the players can do what they want to do. And one of my favorite examples is if you come across a door, and let's say, like, you really want to get past this door, but it requires a key. What you can do if you don't have the key is you can spend a few minutes beating the door down. And then eventually the door will just turn into splinters. And then you can just proceed forward. I remember we did that when we played Divinity. And it took us maybe like 15 minutes. Because it was like a steel door or something.
And it had like 100,000 HP or something. And so, like, we whittled it down, just sitting there clicking over and over and over. But we finally busted this damn door down. And I love that they made it possible to do that.
Yeah, and I love, you know, we didn't really get to any of the major towns in our early access, but, you know, you can kill pretty much, I feel like, anyone you want to.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the kind of the consequence you got to live in. If that means you don't get certain quests unlocked or you lose out on certain rewards, and like, that was your choice. But I think that's what's so cool about this is that the game bends and adapts to the choices that you make. Another example I'm thinking about is when we came across a mind flare, right?
Yeah. So what's a mind flare for anyone who's not familiar? Oh,
I couldn't see. And this is the thing. Like, I couldn't even tell you technically what a mind flare is because it has such deep D&D.
So for me, not being a D&D lore person, I would say it's kind of like a humanoid that has like a squid looking face. that apparently has psychic powers and it's able to control your mind.
Yep. Perfect. So Illithids, I think I said that right, also known as Mind Flayers, are one of the game's oldest monsters. They live in the Underdark, the network of underground caverns found beneath Baldur's Gate, and they use their psionic powers to enslave other sentient creatures. Yeah.
Cool.
So essentially what the whole point of the first act is you have a tadpole in your head, and it's eventually going to turn you into a Mind Flayer. And no one really wants that.
And that's not a good thing.
So your goal is like, how can I remove this mind flayer? Anywho, so you're adventuring along and you see this mind flayer laying on the ground. So the first time you and I played this game, I wanted to, because, you know, like you mentioned, it's all about checks. If you want to try to do a persuasion or an insight check, you have to roll the die and hope you get the result you want. And I remember I spent probably 5 to 10 minutes reloading saves, so I kept failing. And I wanted to keep chatting with this mind flayer, whatever it is you do with a mind flayer, and get all the information out of it I could. And I eventually did, and it was cool. And we got some, like, cool lore, and I feel like a little reward from it or something.
Maybe some XP or something.
Something, yeah. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, I feel like I know a little bit more about this, blah, blah, blah. And then when you and I came back on Stadia, you were in the middle of conversing with the mind flayer. And I was like, nah. And I just like cut its head off and it just promptly ended the dialogue for you. We got our XP and we moved on with our life.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I mean, I didn't know what she was doing. I was on my screen. You know, you were on yours. And next thing I know, the conversation's just over and it's dead. I'm just like, well, that ended quickly. Yeah. I just hear this like... of it's like you slicing its head or whatever you did. And I'm just like, all right.
Yeah, no, like that's what something I just really, truly love and appreciate about this game is it feels, I think that's why I love the Divinity series. And I think why you and I are going to love this game so much as well is Larian has done such just a phenomenal job at bending and adapting to whatever choice you make.
Yeah.
Another thing I think about is when I accidentally sent a poor gnome catapulting through the air off of a windmill.
A windmill.
Yeah, I felt really bad about that. So there's like this poor little gnome circling around, like he's held hostage and he's just going up and down this windmill, you know, as it's circling around.
The orcs strapped him to it.
Yeah, or what, were they orcs?
Oh, I don't know if they were orcs.
No, they're the little green, oh God, my God, what are they called? Goblins.
Goblins?
I think they were goblins.
All right.
Anywho, it doesn't matter. He was just like going around and so we defeated the goblins or whatnot and we wanted to save this poor little gnome. And the first time I accidentally sped the windmill up.
You clicked the wrong button. Instead of turning it off, you clicked speed up.
I knew what I was clicking, but I just wanted to know what would happen if I sped it up. Well, I'll tell you, it went so fast that it catapulted our little gnome friend and then he went flying through the air and he landed in a splat of blood and we couldn't get like our quest or reward from him or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, you live and die by your choices and the consequences of your choices and that ended that quest tree, you know, because... you killed him.
Yeah, whoops. And then I reloaded and then I actually saved him and did it right. And then, we made acquaintances with him. And yep. I'm sure he will come back at some point.
Yeah, he says, like, I'll see you later at some point. So you know he's going to come back later. I mean, unless you kill him like you did.
The other interesting thing in this game, though, and I think this is where it's, like, really tempting, and I know Larry knows what they're doing, is when you see villagers and they're being controlled by the mind flayers and they attack you. And if you fail your persuasion checks to like get them to snap out of it, you have to fight them, but you get XP for it and you get gear for it.
Yeah, it's rewarding to kill the villagers.
So Jason's like, let's just kill them all. Let's just get the XP and let's just like get the gear from it.
And you're all like, no, I want to try and persuade them to like not attack us. And then so when you successfully persuade them, it gives us a little bit of XP and they just wander off. And I'm like, great, a little bit of XP, no loot. Why didn't we kill them?
I know. And I guess that's the beauty of early access is we should just go around killing everyone. Because I know in our official playthrough, I'm going to want to save everybody.
That's my kind of playthrough, man. Just kill everyone. Screw them all. But you know, it's also possible that in later acts, there will be towns and villages where the civilians are not under mind control, and maybe they'll be a little more, you know, typical.
Open to conversation.
Yeah, well, I know you love that. And then while you hold them open with conversation, I'll go pickpocket the shit out of them. That's my jam.
The sleight of hand, I think, is what it's called in this game.
Yep.
So I guess like my question to you is, what would be some advice you'd have for someone who has never played a Divinity game or a Baldur's Gate game, but they're interested in this?
Just come into it with the expectation that there's a learning curve and that I think for most people it would probably be considered kind of a slow start. I mean, the game does drop you in the middle of action in the beginning, but even then there's so much to know and to learn that it can feel frustrating if you're used to games that just sort of handhold you. There's no hand-holding in this game at all from what I could tell. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll build that in the final build.
There were some little tutorials, like in combat. It gives you like a little 8-step thing, but that's kind of all I can really remember.
Yeah, okay. I believe it. I just don't even remember that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just set your expectations because I remember when we first started with Divinity and it's the same sort of thing. We didn't know what we were doing. We'd never played a game like this before. But as we played it more and more, we got more and more hooked. And eventually it became literally our favorite co-op game we've ever played. Mm. And I can see the same thing happening here with Baldur's Gate. We're learning the D&D rules still, you know. And there's still more to learn. But I'm excited to learn more and to, you know, I can tell this game is packed with potential.
Yeah, and that's a good point that you brought up is, since we're not super familiar with D&D rules and what is the difference between intelligence and wisdom and charisma, you know, I feel like every game treats those attributes differently.
Yeah.
There's some weird thing going on because you're always the spellcaster. Like, that's your shtick.
Right.
And it was kind of hard to figure out what it was you wanted to max. Your charisma or do you want your intelligence or do your wisdom? And it was just hard to kind of get a clear answer on that.
I even Googled around trying to figure it out and I could not. I mean, some places were telling me, you know, that if I'm going to play a sorcerer, I need charisma. And I'm like, all right. So I buffed up my charisma, but nowhere in the game does it actually tell me how my charisma is affecting my damage and my hit chance. So I'm not getting good feedback there on that. I'm relying on what somebody wrote on Reddit online.
Yeah. And that's another point is when you and I played on Steam, I mean, this game controls fine on Stadia. I think it's good, but the issue is when you're playing on Steam, it's so much easier to take your little mouse and hover over what every word is. And I think Larian did a great job at explaining, like, this is what this means and this is how this helps you.
Yep.
But you played a different class on Stadia and you went kind of confused on how you min-max that character. And because you don't have that little cursor to hover around, it was kind of confusing as to, like, what do I do?
Yeah, it definitely was. With that said, what did you think about the difference between mouse and keyboard versus controller and TV screen?
I think the game felt really... Actually, I remember when you and I first played it on Stadia, we're like, oh, this is kind of nice. The way it controlled was nice. We had a whole slew of issues when we played on Stadia. We can talk about that in a minute.
On PC, to move, you like point and click. And I know that that's a standard for this genre, but to me, it's just vastly superior user experience, personally, to have a joystick to move my character like I would expect, rather than point click, point click, point click.
You're a fan of those analogs.
Click.
Yeah, no, I'm with you personally. I don't really like playing games on my PC. It's never my favorite. I definitely prefer lounging back on the couch. And with that said, I think the control scheme actually felt like it worked really good for the most part on Stadia. There were some issues when I'm like, okay, what button do I press? You know, like looking on the UI, there's no clear indication. Like, if you want to do this thing, push this button. If you want to do this thing, push that button. And then I would accidentally push a thing and... I mean, thankfully, nothing too catastrophic happened. I didn't accidentally kill us all or anything like that, but...
Right, and there were other little things, like if somebody is affected by a status or like a boon or a bane or something, I was like, how do I tell what the effect of that
on Stadia, you mean?
Yeah, on Stadia. Yeah. Like with a controller, I don't have a mouse. I can't just move my mouse over to that little icon and see what's going on.
Yeah, and I mean, if we can look again back to Divinity games, I feel like they made those real easy to understand.
Yeah.
I think they'll get there with this. Just right will, now yeah. for early access, just set that expectation that
yeah.
if this is all new to you, you might be floundering around a bit.
Yeah, so big learning curve, but I think that, you know, just have that expectation and give it a chance, I would say.
Do you remember when I accidentally squished you with a huge boulder?
Oh my God.
So
yeah, it was like a trap.
I just thought about this, totally like unrelated to what we're talking about. But this is like part of why I love this. Oh, and we walked on the ogre and the bugbear banging.
Anyway.
So we have to go off on a tangent now. So I don't know where we were toward the top of the map somewhere, and we were trying to find something. And there's this huge, like Indiana Jones style boulder on this scaffolding thing. I don't even know what happened. And you and your party, I think it was you and were you Shatterheart or Gale at that time?
Oh, I think I had Gale.
Yeah, you had Gale. Anyway, you two were down below and I was like up top, like dinking around in bed. I clicked on something and I'm just chilling. I somehow let loose this huge boulder. Next thing I know, you two are just dead and squished. And I was like, how did that even happen? And then we had to reload the save like 3 or 4 times because for some reason, like we had to unleash the boulder, but we couldn't outrun it.
Yeah.
And so all of our party members were like running toward the camera. They just kept getting squished.
Kept getting squished. It was, yeah. I mean, I love this game. You can really gnome your partner, you know, if you want to, and save a lot, you know, so that if whatever happens, you don't have to.
Don't forget, friends, gnome, slightly inconvenience.
To slightly inconvenience. It is the verb of the show.
Yeah. We'll use that a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. That was fun. And then I walked into this shed like outside of that goblin village and there was a bugbear and an ogre like banging.
Yeah.
And I decided to interrupt them.
And then didn't we have to like fight
yeah,
them?
Yeah, we
after
had to
that?
Fight them. That was a tough fight.
I mean, I'd be pissed too, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Getting
it's true.
Walked in on, like, what the fuck?
And that's something too I just really do love about Larian is their sense of humor. It's so funny and quirky. I will say this seems a lot more tamed down from the stuff we've seen in Divinity.
Agreed.
In the sense, like, when you look at an item in Divinity Original Sin, you hover over, like, the little, like, pop up icon for it. It has a little description of, like, what the item is. It's usually a really funny, tongue in cheek, sarcastic humor. But I feel like in Baldur's Gate, it's definitely toned down, which is like, I understand. It's a darker IP. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been around for a very long time. Like, you have to remain very true to what this game is. Yep. But there's obviously like some really funny shit that happens.
Yeah, you can tell that their personality sort of leaks through in certain points here and there. And I really like that.
Yeah. But yeah, overall, man, like I would just say this was really fun. Like I had a really good time playing it. I don't know if you and I will ever hop back into early access before the full release.
Yeah, I think at this point I've seen what I needed to see and my impression was like, we're going to have a ball with this game, but, you know, I'm ready. I'm willing to wait till full release so that there are no bugs.
And do you see us playing on Stadia or Steam?
Controller.
Yeah.
So, you know,
ooh, you know like, what? Yeah, you're right. I think the way we'll do it, sorry, I just answering my own question here, is we'll probably bring one of the desktops into, hook it up to one of the TVs and just do split screen.
Yeah, and use a controller. Alternatively, if they're going to release to Xbox and PlayStation, that might even be ideal.
I don't think that's going to happen for some time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, it's definitely going to be a PC-based release at first.
I mean, the problem with Stadia is that, at least for us, and we've got really good internet, but when we're playing side by side, I guess it sucks up too much bandwidth because we keep losing, you know, the screen just goes in and out of
resolution,
you know, HD
and
really pixelated and
laggy controls.
Yeah, there's Stadia. I'm just not impressed with Stadia. That's the problem.
It's hard. I think the idea of Stadia is really cool, and I think,
is it before its time?
Kind of. I mean, it's so hard because we've been covering Stadia. I mean, I've been covering it for some time, and the main issue is they just set such improper expectations of what Stadia was going to be. I think the technology and the idea of it is really neat. I just think that we're just not there yet. So yeah, maybe a little bit before its time, but then you see people like Microsoft and xCloud, and you have Amazon Luna now coming out, and it's like, okay, well, I can't speak for Luna, but from what I've heard, xCloud is working really well. So anyway, I think Stadia has potential, and I understand why Larian partnered with them for this. But I agree. I think the ideal way for you and I to play this will be on one of the beefy desktops hooked up to a TV, with split screen controller support.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I mean, the way Larian's done their split screen in the past is just perfect. I wish people, more developers would make their split screen like that.
It's phenomenal. We've had just so many good times playing, you know, on a single split screen Larian games.
Yeah.
And I can see us doing that.
The way the camera follows you around, the way it automatically combines the screen when you're close if you want it to.
Yep.
The UI when someone's looking in their inventory, the way you can switch between characters. It works really, really well in split screen.
Absolutely.
So I just make the assumption that'll work the same on Baldur's Gate 3. But before we wrap up, do you have any closing thoughts? I mean, this is an early access game.
Yeah, I mean, from what we've played, you know, I'll just kind of repeat that I can see a ton of potential here. I think it's going to be great. I think we're going to really have a ton of fun with this. The downsides with early access are just the bugs, but that's what you expect. It's early access. They're trying to find and identify and hammer out the bugs. So if you're going to play it now, just have the right expectations. But you can definitely still have fun with it.
Yeah, there are some people who love this part of game dev where consumers are like, I want to play the early game because I want to help mold and shape this game. And not poor Larian, it's more like cute Larian. They didn't anticipate to get this many downloads and people playing. It already has like 16,000 positive reviews on Steam. And I think Larian thought they would just get a small, cute little like group of people that they can have like intimate conversations with about what they want, what they don't want, what works for them, what doesn't work for them. And they're like, holy crap, so many people signed up for early access. We are in over our heads, which led to some issues. They literally broke Steam for a little bit.
Good for them.
I know, it makes me so happy. They're a very humble, I think it's like 250 people, but humble studio in the sense that, you know, they haven't let all their success get to their head. And I think that's one of the reasons why I really appreciate them and respect them. And
same.
They're always open to critique and learning what they can do better. And so if that's something that's interesting to you, early access is probably your jam. But if like bugs and game breaks and save wipes, because it's worth noting, your save will not continue through to the final product. So if you are worried about losing your custom character that you created.
Yep.
You know.
Also, you know, that's a good point, is that you can only get through to the end of Act 1 right now.
Right.
So, you know, if you're expecting the full game, that's not coming for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The other thing I noticed that we didn't talk about much was character creation. But just to touch on that real quick, I think there's 6 classes right now you can unlock. I have them written down here somewhere, but I'm not sure, like, what happened to them. Bunch of different races you can play as, and I mean, it's your typical, I feel like, D&D character creation sheet. Like, we don't have to get into the weeds about what that is, but there's definitely a lot of customization options. So, you should be excited about that.
I've also never seen another game do this before, but it was interesting. Is it has you create a, what is it, like a love interest?
Yeah.
And it has you create a character that essentially, basically, it's just create, like, the hottest dude or girl that you can think of. And then that, I don't know how that's going to weave into the story.
You saw a little taste of it, but I don't want to spoil it, but definitely a cool thing that they're doing. So, I mean, that's pretty much our thoughts on Baldur's Gate 3 early access. Like I said, don't anticipate us playing this game anymore for now, but we will just wait with bated breath.
Yes.
Until the final release.
And if you're going to go out and play it, you know, tweet us or email us. We'll give you our contact info here in a bit. We'd love to hear what you guys think about it.
Yeah. So like you were saying, if you want to get in touch, you can email us at contact@coopshow, aka coopshow.com. You can go to coopshow.com to visit our website. You can follow me on Twitter @blondnerd. And if you like our conversations, you know, you want to toss a little, you know, review our way, we'd appreciate it.
Little review.
Just a little review. It doesn't have to be anything too
spare
fancy.
Spare review. It's like just spare change. Spare review.
Spare change.
You know, you get it? Like spare change.
Yeah, but I don't get how that translates. See, now I'm putting you on the spot. How does that translate into a review?
Well, it's like we're begging for, like, not spare change. We're like begging, like, spare review. You know, like, can you spare us a review?
Actually, you worked your way out on that one, I think.
All right, I dug out.
You made your case. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Later, guys.
Bye.